More and more New Zealanders are falling for investment scams. The Financial Markets Authority is reporting a steep rise in the number of complaints, up 79% in the first half of the year compared to the same period in 2020. From January to June, the FMA received 158 complaints about investment scams and fraud, up from 88 a year ago. The FMA says scammers are taking advantage of the pandemic crisis, either by using COVID-19 as part of their pitch or using the economic climate to prey on people's fears. It's noted since the start of the pandemic, there's been a rise in three new types of scams: those using social media to make contact with victims, romance investment scams, and those using imposter websites that closely resemble legitimate businesses. In a moment, we'll speak with Banking Ombudsman Nicola Sladden about what banks' obligations are to pay people back, and also NetSafe Chief Executive Martin Cocker, who says he's also seeing a significant increase in reports of scams. But first, I spoke with Liam Mason, General Counsel at the Financial Markets Authority, and I asked him if this big increase in reported scams is really just the tip of the iceberg.
Then that is our suspicion, is that what we see is honestly a fraction of what's going on. And you've pinpointed what is a big part of that is when people realise they've been scammed, there's a bit of an embarrassment factor, yeah.
Well, let's have a look at the three types of scams, I think, new types of scams that you're seeing a big rise in since the start of the pandemic.
Sure. Well, what we're highlighting here is scams that are being carried out by social media connections, firstly, and we highlight a case study of Nisha, who found somebody through LinkedIn, looked credible, were offering an investment opportunity, a crypto opportunity, and as they built trust through the platform and got her to invest increasing amounts of money. It was only when she saw that that they were saying that there was a tax payment that was required, that alarm bell started to go off, and that's a really good alarm bell, a really good warning sign of a scam. As anyone says, there's a penalty to pay, there's a special tax to pay. That's a feature of scams.
And then there's Jane's story also. This is Hinge.
Yeah, the second one, Jane, this is a really nasty sort of scam. They use romantic attachments, close relationships to build that trust. What a scammer needs is your trust, and they'll use whatever hooks they can. And this was somebody who, you know, said that he wanted to share his hobbies with her, and convinced her through that to start to give more and more money to what was set up as a fake foreign exchange trading site. And it's the same sort of notion of taking the time. What's worrying about these is the time that will be invested by the scammer in building up the relationship, building up the trust, and then taking the money.
So we've got social media contact scams, we've got romance investment hybrid scams, and then there are imposter websites. And you've heard from a Christchurch investment company that got caught up in this.
Yes, and this is something that we've seen grow over the last couple of years, is firms that simply steal the identity of a legitimate New Zealand business and then use that to rip off New Zealand victims, and that in part is in response to warnings like from people like us that you should go with a New Zealand company, you should go with something you can trust. This company did all the right things once it discovered that its identity had been ripped off. It went onto the company's website. It used fields there to put warnings for potential victims, and that was great to see. But it just shows that the people who are wanting to steal money, they'll go to pretty ingenious lengths to get it.
You've given us the number of complaints being investigated. Do you have a money figure, Liam, on how much money has been lost through the scams reported to the authority in the first half of this year?
I wouldn't want to put a number on that, to be honest. Partly we don't always get that information, and also what we're seeing is only a tip of the iceberg. But you know, just these examples, one of them was over 100,000. from a single case. So we're talking well into the millions, really.
Who are particularly vulnerable from these types of scammers?
Almost anyone can be the victim of these things. We have seen scams that target particular communities, such as Chinese or Pacific communities, in the last 12 months, and we've run campaigns in Pacific languages and Chinese, and to try and help those communities. Unfortunately, what we also know is that somebody who has been scammed once is more likely to be scammed again, and we see that. Second time around scams, even companies posing to be recovery agencies to get back the money you lost first time, are a second round of scams. So it's a feature of these things that somebody who has been hit once is likely to be hit again.
We imagine that older people can be particularly vulnerable, especially those living alone. But I get the sense that with social media now, it's younger people too who are becoming prey.
I think it is. And right at the moment, and this is one of the reasons we put out this warning now, the unfortunate fact is a lot of people are spending a lot of time at home at the moment. They're spending more time online. And that means there's greater opportunity for them to spend time on these things and to get curious about them. And that's the time to be really careful.
The situation also with COVID, an awful lot of people now are financially even more stretched than they were before, possibly even desperate. Loneliness, I mentioned before, this pandemic of loneliness that we have, and what also, I guess, scammer sophistication?
All of these things are features. I think at the moment there is a particular vulnerability for people who are more isolated than usual. One of our pieces of advice is to always talk to somebody else, and before you commit any money, just get an outside set of eyes on it. And that's a little bit harder at the moment. And of course, the simple financial stress that COVID is causing for a number is going to make them reach out for things they wouldn't ordinarily.
In fact, I think many scammers are using COVID-19 as part of their pitch now.
We have seen a bit of that, and have gone after that pretty hard when we've seen it. More, I think what we're seeing is scammers just using the opportunity of COVID.
You have on your website really good information, suggestions on how to spot investment scams, but could you give me maybe some bullet points, a few more for listeners who may be about to fall prey to some of these scammers at the moment? What are the very obvious signs?
Well, there are a couple of things that are really common. So unregulated high-risk investments, the novelty factor of those, so cryptocurrency, foreign exchange, options, there'll usually be little or no information that's available about the investment opportunity. Really common feature is pressure. You know, you'll have to invest now. You've got to get the money in quickly. There's a wonderful chance you're going to miss out on. And firms that are offshore based are a large part of it. One thing that we definitely see is increasing requests for money. They'll start with a little bit, then it'll be more, then it'll be more. And there's an opportunity with each request to stop and really consider whether this is something to do, rather than just putting good money after bad.
These scammers are slippery by nature, often very savvy as well, ahead of the game. So what about prosecutions? Can many prosecutions take place?
I'm afraid the truth is these things are almost always based offshore, and once the money's gone offshore, both the ability to get that back, but also our ability to find those business criminals and bring them to justice is very, very limited.
We started by talking about how people often are very embarrassed, too embarrassed to come forward and lodge a complaint or record what has happened to them. How important is it, do you think, for them and for agencies like your own trying to counter this to understand what's happening out there?
Well, if somebody thinks they're being targeted by a scam or might be being targeted by a scam, if they get in touch with us, we can talk them through it. We can give them information that might help them to see in time, the warning signs that are there. It's also incredibly useful for the rest of the population, if you like, to let us know so that others don't get into the same mess so that we can put up warnings. The number of warnings that we've published about particular scams has increased nearly 30% in the last year, and that's off the back of 79% increase in complaints. And we know that these complaints, they get onto a Google search, they give people a chance to stop before they lose their money.
You gave us three examples of many that have come in, Liam. There must be some really heartbreaking stories that you've come across.
There really are. There's some really distressing stories. And, you know, you really feel for the people who have put money into what are very sophisticated and well-run scams. And that's part of our warning, is that it's not the unusually gullible who are falling prey to this. These things are done in a pretty slick way, and you've got to be as alert as you can be.
That's Liam Mason from the Financial Markets Authority. With us now is the Chief Executive of NetSafe, Martin Cocker. Martin, I imagine that nothing Liam said there will come as a surprise. How about NetSafe? Are you also handling a substantial increase in the number of reported scams?
Yeah, we definitely are. I mean, we expect to receive about 300, 350 reports of scams a week. At the moment, we're getting more like 500, 550 since we went into that level four lockdown in Auckland and lockdown across the rest of the country. So there's definitely an increase in activity. I mean, we have to be careful what we, you know, extrapolate from reporting, because there are so many variables that go into reporting. But certainly we're seeing a lot of activity, and people are coming to us to report a lot of scams. And, yeah, very consistent with what you've just said.
Are you seeing any new trends, any new scams out there?
Yeah, new trends insofar as definitely there's a focus on the opportunities that the lockdown creates. So there's some direct scams, you know, just knowing that we're looking for information about things. So people putting up websites to, you know, give us information about vaccinations, or, you know, fake shops for, you know, personal protective equipment, that sort of thing. So definitely that's happened. It happened again last year during the lockdown. It's happening at the moment. And then also, there are some things, you know, for scammers, there's a couple of things that are important to them. One is, you know, trying to get a scam in front of enough people who might fall for it at the right time. And the thing that helps them out is knowing that, you know, there's something which is consistent across the population. And, of course, lockdown creates a big target audience for certain things, especially freight scams. So we're currently at home and we're having to get everything freighted to us. So, you know, you see a sharp increase in freight-related scams. So people getting messages being told they need to make payments to get freight delivered. And, of course, the reality is we're waiting for a lot of items, so our guard is lowered to those sorts of scams. So, you know, we see an increase in losses. Those losses tend to be smaller, of course, compared to those giant losses of investment scams, et cetera. But still, they can be really, you know, disappointing for people. They shake people's confidence in using technology, and obviously, you know, any money you lose is, well, money that's lost. It's not returning value in your life that it could have been if it stayed in your pockets.
I'm sure you've been dealing with an awful lot of people who have been really, as you say, upset by this. So there is the financial loss, but there is that emotional loss, as all that emotional devastation that can happen to an awful lot of people who are vulnerable.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, there's no question. I mean, some scams are you know, horrendous in terms of the effect that they have on people. And those double whammy investment romance scams are, you know, just some of the most horrible sort of things they have to work through with somebody whilst they discover that that's what's happened to them. But, you know, the numbers across the board are really high, and a lot more people are affected by scams than come forward. And I can say that because we surveyed the population only a couple of months ago for a piece of work we were doing, asked people if they've been into a scam far enough to lose money or personal information. So, you know, basically got into the scam, not necessarily got all the way through it. And 6% of the population said they had. If you average out the money they said that they'd lost, it's about $150 million across the population. So it's big amounts of money. And yet, you know, what we see reported to us, $20 or $30 million a year. So there's a whole lot of people out there who are losing money, who aren't feeling like they want to or will come forward and report it. And, you know, we've got to do our best to remove that stigma, I guess, if you fall for a scam, you know, you're a fool or something like that, and try to let people know that we understand, you know, scams are complicated, You know, we see everybody across the population fall for scams, and the most important thing you can do is seek out advice, because unfortunately, once you're into those kinds of experiences, they just go on and on and on.
There'll be a whole lot of different reasons why different people fall for a scam. Julia has suggested that a possible reason many are falling for scams is the very low or no interest on investments and bank accounts at the moment, and people who rely on interest are tempted by the possibility of a higher return. I suspect that would be a common story.
Yeah, I mean, you've got to be motivated to get over the first hurdle. You know, somebody puts a opportunity in front of you, you've got to be motivated. And so sometimes that'll be just because of circumstances. Like I say, if you're expecting parcels to arrive and you get a message about parcels arriving, you're more likely to sort of progress on that. And if you're looking to, you know, grow your wealth and, you know, those opportunities aren't there and those opportunities are put in front of you, then yeah, you're more likely to at least explore them. You know, we do see the effort that that scammers go to create investment scams or opportunities that look legitimate is incredible. But of course, it makes sense when you think that people lose literally hundreds of thousands of dollars on this. That's 100% profit margin for the scammer. So it's no big deal to build a website and an entire bespoke communications campaign for a person if you're talking about, you know, taking $100,000 off them. So, you know, by the time you start into the process and they start to get money from you, yeah, they can return that money and just keep that whole experience feeling very authentic and real. And that's, you know, we see people who get drawn into that, then they do lose, you know, literally their life savings, all of their money and more.
What are some safeguards? I mean, Carol's texted in to suggest that checking the email address is often a giveaway that it's a scammer, or bad grammar or bad spelling.
Yeah, I mean, there's often little cues, and it's amazing how often, you know, given how sophisticated some scams are, the language is poor, and, you know, there are sort of obvious mistakes like email addresses that clearly don't come from the company that they purport to be from. You can't rely on any of those things. It, you know, you have to sort of be constantly wary and looking for any little cue. And there's a point in every scam where you get asked to be given, you know, to hand over money or to hand over, you know, really important personal details. And that's the point at which, you know, we encourage everybody, no matter how long you've been engaged with a business or anything, just to stop and do that research. And that research, you know, can be as simple as doing a search online for the business name and seeing if anybody's reported anything about it. And often that will lead to you discovering that that something is a scam and disconnecting. But I don't... 10 years ago, we used to be able to sort of point to key things that indicated a website was legitimate or a business was legitimate, but people are faking all of those things now, so it's really hard to, you know, to say, look out for that particular thing. Look out for everything.
Yeah, and we're getting lots of stories coming through. We'll share them in a moment. Stay on the line, if you would, Martin. Nicola Sladden is the Banking Ombudsman. Ata Maria, Nicola.
Morena, Lynn. How are you?
Well, I'm really worried, actually. We've got some very concerning statistics coming from NetSafe and the FMA in terms of increasing reports of scams. What are you finding as Banking Ombudsman and reports, I guess, from banks?
Yes, well, last year we received a very concerning 21% increase in scam complaints from people who'd lost money in scams. So that was 331 cases. So like Liam said, we continue to see lots of tech or telco support scams, bank fraud scams where people are impersonating legitimate businesses, together with a wide range of invoice, romance, social media and investment scams. And when we receive those complaints, customers are generally wanting the bank to recover the payments or take responsibility for their losses.
Well, here we go. This is why we were so keen to talk to you, Nicola. What are a bank's obligations to its customers who've been scammed?
Well, banks are responsible to take care, to look after people's money, to ensure that it's safe. And so if a payment is made without the customer's authority, banks are liable to reimburse the customers unless they've contributed to the loss by, for example, disclosing the PIN or password or other personal credentials. But when it's a romance or an invoice scam, usually the customer has actually authorised the payments. And in those cases, we look at whether the bank has acted with reasonable care, in particular has identified or acted on any red flags. And if in those sort of cases, we also look at whether or not the bank has taken reasonable steps to recover the wrongful payment. But as Liam says, often the money is whipped out into an overseas bank account and it's very difficult to recover once it's gone.
And we are talking about millions and millions and millions of dollars a year being lost here. Do you have any idea of the proportion of customers who would be successful in getting their banks to help them out? I mean, is it a small proportion, medium or large?
I would say it's a relatively small proportion, but I would encourage anyone who realises they're a victim of a scam to immediately contact their bank, because the sooner they do it, the greater the chance of recovery. But as we've heard today, it's just terrible, the amounts of money that are being lost to New Zealanders day in, day out.
I'm sure
and,
also,
and the best prevention is the key in relation to fraud and scams.
Exactly. And I'm sure also you are seeing some desperate situations come through from people who have been scammed. Some people will be able to absorb it and move on, but an awful lot of people, the particularly vulnerable, I imagine, must be coming through with some desperate pleas for help.
It is heartbreaking hearing the stories. And as we've heard today, anyone can become victim to these types of scams. And we're all vulnerable. So it's really fantastic that we are continuing to raise awareness of some of these terrible insidious crimes. And there's quite a lot of misunderstanding as well of the role of a bank, and that's quite a common theme in the cases we see. Many people expect that banks actively monitor their accounts and should have picked up the fraud or scam because the transactions were unusual. But in many cases, the banks aren't aware and there are no red flags. And in those situations, the customer bears the loss, which is really tough.
Martin, I'll bring you back in here and say we're getting so much feedback from our listeners. Maureen has been in touch to say scams supposedly coming from the Inland Revenue are very real. And I've seen these myself, actually. So these are things to be concerned about. I mean, basically, yes. Should you just look at your emails with a wary eye?
Yeah, just don't follow the links that are provided to you. The IRD is a big target, and it's really moved to a lot of online services, which means that it's a logical target for scammers because they can run scams that look actually like legitimate IRD business. But when you get an email that says click on this link to go somewhere, the key thing is not to, no matter who it comes from. You know, go to your browser, put in the URL of the place you want to go and log in that way. Don't follow links because those links will take you to a legitimate looking site, but it won't be the real IRD.
When I was talking to Liam, I don't know why I was surprised when he was giving examples. I mean, dating sites, we imagine, you know, that's a lot of vulnerable people are going to be on dating sites. There's romance link scams. But LinkedIn was mentioned as well, and this kind of professional organisation. So I guess you have to be very careful on social media of any site now?
Yeah, that's right. Because on social media, we present a lot of information that tells people about us and therefore tells them how to scam us. You know, they tell us we tell people what business we're in, we tell people what our interests are, you know, we tell people what we're doing for a holiday. So all of these things are opportunities for scammers to construct a scam that feels, you know, that fits with what we're expecting in our life. So, yeah, I mean, social media has been a real benefit to scammers. That's not to be critical of social media for all the other benefits it brings, but, yeah, it definitely has aided scammers. And it's important that we recognise often when people come to us and tell us things about ourselves, it's just to remember how much information about us is now public. And so, therefore, it's not, you know, so unusual to hear those things quoted back to us.
Thank you both so much. Talking to Martin Cocker from NetSafe and Nicola Sladden, who is the Banking Ombudsman. If you've been the victim of scammers, we would be interested in hearing from you.